so serious.
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game? Yeah!
Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know how we got. Actually, that's a lie. I do know how we got here. but we're ready to start another Toy Department again with me apologizing for not doing the homework.
Yeah, it's cute that you pretend that some alternate explanation besides Derek is bad at homework is needed at this point.
Well. All right, so I have a good excuse. All right.
Well, you don't, though, because we had a conversation yesterday wherein it is very clear that even if your excuse did not exist, you still would have failed to do the homework.
Yeah, all right, so I made two critical errors here. The first was thinking that we were doing Phantom Thread and not iTanya.
That was a mistake.
Yeah, that was a mistake. So I definitely did not make any attempt to watch iTanya this weekend. But I tried multiple times to watch Phantom Thread and got screwed up by a blizzard. So I'm thinking I'm good there. I have no excuse for not watching Mudbound because that's on Netflix. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, Netflix. And I would say since I did watch it just by way of both paying off last week's tease and convincing you you should probably watch it. It's a hard watch. It's not as hard a watch as I was expecting.
Really? Okay.
It's very good. It's very good and well acted.
I never had any doubt it's very good. It just does not seem like
it. But it's not as constantly. I mean, there's a brutal cloud hanging over it, and it's a movie about race relations in the South, you know, almost 100 years ago, so there's some roughness, obviously. Yeah.
And look, as you know, I don't like period pieces. Largely for that reason. So this is a thing that's like focused on this. You know what I mean? So
Yeah. And you're not wrong. I'm just saying minute to minute, it's not as brutal as I thought it might be.
That's good. And like I said, I know it's good. I know I need to watch it. I'm sure I won't even hate watching it, but I just have some trepidation. That which is not why I didn't do it. I just completely slacked. Sorry.
I'm telling you though, the Queen Mary J is impressive. You know, yeah. I don't know that I've seen her act before, and she gives a really moving performance.
I think I've seen her in something or other over the years.
Yeah.
But I guess we can talk about the quality of that performance in a little bit, because we're going to cover the 2018 Oscar nominations, which dropped this morning, and feature Mary J. Blige. You saw St. Vincent. We'll get a little bit of that. We talked about that when I saw her, and I'm curious. Mm-hmm. I mean, clearly you hated it, right? So I'm curious to see how that goes. And then we'll get into some Crashing and then the new American Crime Story season, which premiered this week. And and maybe some other stuff if we have time. But let's get to the main event, right? The Oscars. They're here.
Yeah.
This one, you know, we're now at this point where, right, there are Todd McShay's and Mel Kiper Jr.'s of the Oscar race, right? Joe Lunardi's, you know what I mean? Who are out there like bracketing this thing for you.
Oscartology.
Yeah, exactly. You know, several months out. And so I do feel like, you know, you look at these nominations and you go, yeah, that's pretty much what I expected. You know what I mean?
It's not quite as... I lost my train of thought. Oh, well. I will say this about knowing... Oh, that's what I was going to say. It's not quite as... what's the word? Anticlimactic as Woj tweeting draft picks 5 minutes before they happen. but it's verging on that territory.
What would you say is the biggest surprise to you on this page? I have my answer.
The biggest surprise?
Yeah.
Maybe just, I guess I might have said the quantity of nominations for Phantom Thread, but that's just because I haven't seen it, and it's the latest of the bunch, I think. Nothing super shocked me.
I would say for me, I'll go in this order. Number one was, you know, Boss Baby getting a nomination. I didn't see that coming. For Best Animated Film.
Well, how many animated films are there?
There's a lot of animated films. You know, whatever. Coco's going to win that, so that's not really like a thing.
Yeah. Have you even heard of the other three?
No, I haven't. I'm assuming they're foreign.
So then I think that tells you there just was not a lot of material for the animated feature film category.
I would say after that, it's Denzel, which is it's not a shock. There had been, you know, there had been some awards buzz, certainly. But I think Denzel getting that lead actor nom was a bit of a surprise. By the way,
I watched that, and I am not surprised.
It's now year 18. For Denzel's Philadelphia co-star, Tom Hanks, without a nomination, which I think is kind of interesting, especially because I thought he was excellent in The Post. Unless he got supporting actor or something that was known. Yeah, and he didn't get
nominated. I'll tell you what. He was, I think Timothée Chalamet's best performance was in Lady Bird, but putting that aside, I did not think Tom Hanks was better than any of the guys who got nominated.
All right. Well, I haven't seen Denzel. Well,
unless you want to call him a supporting actor, but even then, I don't think he's better than the guys who got nominated.
Yeah. Well,
I thought it was an average Tom Hanks performance.
I take it back.
Honestly,
I haven't seen most of these since I haven't gotten a Phantom Thread yet.
I kind of thought Tom Hanks's performance in The Post was average, especially because I really thought Meryl Streep was. Average for Tom Hanks, to be clear. I thought Meryl Streep was phenomenal. I thought Bradley Whitford stood out. I thought, you know, Odenkirk stood out.
It's a great cast. There was a great, it's tough in an ensemble piece. It's, you know, I have some bias in this because I, consume a lot of media from people who have worked at the Washington Post in their life. So I know a lot about the man, Ben Bradley. And I've heard from so many people that he really nailed the essence of this guy who now has a couple of, more than one definitive film portrayal, which I think is interesting as a person. Jason Robards is sort of famous for playing him as well. So,
And didn't someone play him in? Was Robards the one who played him in Spotlight?
I don't think he was in Spotlight. I could be wrong about that.
Okay, I'm gonna look into this.
Yeah, it's a different paper.
I know it's a different paper, but I thought he was like in the boardroom there by 2001 or something.
Yeah, look
like
into that. Let me know. Third surprise would be Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, I mean,
but you know, okay. not really a big deal. Like I said, there's not a lot of surprises on this thing.
No, so the Kobe thing is. Here's the thing, man. Do you think? Let me put it this way. Do you think there was a punitive element to the lack of nominations for the Franco film?
No.
Disaster Artist?
I don't.
You don't?
I don't. Look, I'm not going to rule it out. I'm certainly not here to say definitively that there weren't. But look, that's a comedy. You know, we like that movie, but it's at its heart, it's a comedy, and I think people got a little bit
off
by the Globes recognition because the Globes has a separate category for musical and comedy, and they're just more likely to nominate those kind of movies, you know,
or
give
awards
for those kind of movies.
That makes sense. I will say, as much as I said the thing about Timothée Chalamet, I think he was better in Lady Bird. I think we've both said our piece on Dunkirk and that it's just not good and certainly doesn't deserve a Best Picture nomination or director. But I did
think of the cinematography and some of the technical stuff it's nominated for, I think was very deserving.
Agreed. It's just the director is also supposed to participate in creating a story and characters, which was
I agree. It didn't get it. Please tell me, there's no screenplay nomination for Dunkirk.
No, oh, God. There isn't a screenplay.
I would actually really like to know. You can find scripts out there, right? Like, how many pages was the Dunkirk script?
Seven pages, five and a half of them were just description of
I feel like
playing.
You could have written it on a napkin.
Yeah, absolutely. You really just need to but let's not get into Dunkirk again.
Right,
anyway,
sorry.
The point is I not that I set my mood based on Oscar nominations, but I'm pretty happy with these. Yeah, we kind of knew what they were, but I think they're pretty close to right.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about not a lack of surprise or the lack of surprise, but I don't have a huge problem. And that's part of why I feel sort of comfortable with the, you know, Franco quote unquote snub is that, you know, from what I can tell, I don't know that he's more deserving of a nomination than those five performances right there. And I would throw Tom Hanks into that mix. And probably a few others who I'm not necessarily thinking about right now. So,
yeah, that's probably fair. I mean, the only really principal movie I haven't seen is Phantom Thread, which I am confident is very good. So I think I pretty much agree with you. I would just say if there's any punitive element to Franco, then Kobe is even more of a head shaker.
Oh.
Because, you know, we don't need to relitigate anything, but if Me Too and Time's Up, then Kobe should not be winning things.
We have, I feel like we as a people have just sort of generally forgot about that.
We have, and I think, you know, it would be my hope that as we Me Too and Time's Up, we also remember things like Kobe, you know? But, you know, Gary Oldman won at the SAG Awards, and so I don't know how to measure or understand anything anymore, but I did have that thought that, man, we're talking a lot about women and not assaulting them, and Kobe Bryant just got nominated for an Academy Award.
Yeah, that's fair. Who do you think, you know, are you buying the idea that Three Billboards and Shape of Water are the front runners?
Again, I have not seen Phantom Thread. I am kind of in the camp on Three Billboards that its wins at SAG and the Golden Globes are going to hurt it. Because it's not my favorite. It's not even my favorite Martin McDonagh movie. It's definitely not, I liked it very much, but it's definitely not close to the best movie of the year.
No.
And I think it's one of these unfortunate things where a perfectly good movie is going to be maligned for a month because people think other movies were better, and they're right.
It's already started. I don't know if you've seen the Wesley Morris piece in the New York Times, which is getting a lot of attention. I think both pretty big fans of Wesley's work in general. And I think we both like the movie a lot more than he did. But he's not wrong about a number of things.
No, and that's my point is, like, here's the thing about a movie like Three Billboards. It's really good. It's edgy. It's violent and bizarre, and casting it as a film of great meaning in an era of massive controversy is tough.
Yeah, and honestly, man. I feel like the idea this is a Me Too movie is it's a bit of a shoehorn for that.
Yeah, the thing is, like, a movie can be a movie that empowers a woman and doesn't devalue them and tells a story and is just that.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to rise to the level of making a grand statement about women.
Yeah, and also, literally all of these movies were made 2 years ago. Like,
exactly.
The Me Too movies have not come out yet. So, you know, anything that sort of captures that moment is doing it by accident, you know? And, you know, I saw an interview with Greta Gerwig where she literally just said that. You know what I mean? Like, it's worked out that Lady Bird is this beautiful feminine movie in a time where I think people are looking for that. But I don't, you know, that certainly wasn't planned that way. I think, you know, and I'm sure we'll talk about this more as we get closer, but I think Lady Bird's a real threat for Best Picture. And I think Greta Gerwig's going to be a threat for Best Director. You know, it would not surprise me if Lady Bird kind of comes up on the outside and wins a lot of these awards.
Yeah, I think it's we talked about this. To me, the two best movies of the year were The Big Sick and Lady Bird. Now, I have not seen Phantom Thread. But I, as much as I really loved The Shape of Water, I liked most of these movies. I actually, did we talk about The Darkest Hour at all?
We didn't because I haven't seen it.
Okay, well, I'll just throw my hat in the ring for it. It's not the best picture of the year. It may not win anything. And, you know, there's all that whole separate conversation about Gary Oldman that should probably be had.
I think Gary Oldman's going to win, though.
He is, because he's by far the best actor in the category. Again, having not seen Daniel Day-Lewis, and with all due respect to excellent performances by Daniel Kaluuya, Denzel Washington, and Timothée Chalamet, Cary Oldman is transformed, and the voice is utterly convincing. The demeanor is utterly convincing. The sweet moments with his wife are utterly convincing. He is phenomenal, and I've actually, having watched this movie and talked to others about it, I'm a little surprised how much I liked it in retrospect, because it is a historical movie. It is probably a movie best for history buffs and people really interested in, you know, the 1940s world history. But everyone is so good and it's so compelling, I thought, that this was a really good movie. But nevertheless, Lady Bird was just better than all of them.
You know, yeah,
it really was.
It is. I can't, you know.
We talked about The Post. It's a almost perfectly executed film starring some of the heavyweights of our lifetime, directed by arguably the heavyweight of our lifetime, and everyone does a great job, and it's really good, but not as good as Lady Bird.
Yeah. Well, you know, that was our number one, or at least my number one. I think
it might have been my number two, but yeah. Just generally speaking, I had a real soft spot for The Big Sick, but it was it's pretty perfect. Lady Bird is a pretty perfect film.
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen The Big Sick nominated more in the adapted, you know, than the the original screenplay.
I'll tell you what, you are right. Comedies just cannot get respect. Because if that comedy can't get respect, I don't know what can.
That is the story of my Oscar life. Like, the movies I like are always the ones that get, like, one screenplay nom. So, you know, sometimes they win. But
me too. I would say this is actually a better year than most for me. Because I thought, I mean, honestly, I would put the other Timothée Chalamet performance in. Other than that, I have zero complaints about any of the acting nominations, which is incredibly rare.
Yeah, and I'm not with you on that.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not with you on that at all.
Huh. All right, give it to me.
I thought I don't think that Call Me By Your Name works at all without Timothée Chalamet.
Oh, you thought he was better in that than Lady Bird?
Yeah, significantly better than that than Lady Bird. And look, he was fine in Lady Bird. I'm not
okay, but what? Lady Bird. I just like Lady Bird better. But yeah. So you agree with me in general, though?
Yeah, in general, I agree with you. I think they mostly got it right. You know what I mean?
And isn't that – I don't think I usually feel like that.
No. You're right. Usually you feel like they're people who got robbed or, you know.
Usually I feel like there's two or three performances.
How did this guy get in here? There's none of those. I don't really think.
It's kind of cool.
With the exception of a couple of things I haven't seen. But, yeah, good on you, Oscars. You did all right.
I'm going to have to go see Phantom Thread this week.
You know, I mean, like, the things you were prepared to complain about are, like, you know, Jordan Peele didn't get nominated, but he did, you know? Like,
that's right. And so, I think that category may be the most interesting, and I am going to throw a temper tantrum when Christopher Nolan wins.
You are not going to throw a temper tantrum because I think Greta Gerwig's going to win.
I hope you're right. I think, again, having not seen Phantom Thread, Greta Gerwig would be third for me.
If you're asking me to set the odds, I got Christopher Nolan fifth.
Oh, great. Well, I hope you're right. I'll say this. I am not talking about odds so much as how I would rank.
Yeah.
And for me, with Phantom Thread to the side, Dunkirk is fourth, obviously. I think as much as it might be the best movie of the year, if I'm going directing, I'm putting Lady Bird third, because it's a tough fight for me between The Shape of Water and Get Out. Because what you have in those two movies is guys who I think accomplished incredible feats of direction. For Guillermo del Toro, he made a completely convincing and engaging, like, I was enwrapped by a love story between a fish man and a lady who couldn't speak. And that, to me, is an incredible feat of direction. And for Jordan Peele, he utterly subverted the horror genre in a massive statement about race in America. all in a tiny budget horror film that turned into the, you know, one of the biggest stories of the year. That to me is an incredible feat of direction.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's going to be interesting, you know, because there are some narratives that, you know, I mean, Barbara Streisand, I think, pretty poignantly got up and said how long it had been since a woman had not been nominated for best director.
Yeah.
And it was
You said, I'm not going to be upset if Greta Gerwig wins.
Yeah, I won't be either. And I, you know, it's so weird because, like, you know, if you're going to ask me to name five favorite directors, like Christopher Nolan is definitely in that group for me.
I would say the two guys whose movies I have either not seen or least liked are two of my top five directors living. I mean, PTA and Christopher Nolan, I am with you. They are pretty much it.
I'm not currently rooting for either one of them, so it's a weird year in that way.
But maybe we should be fair, because we might change our mind if and when we see Phantom Thread, hopefully this week.
Yes. I think it's not supposed to snow anymore, so I feel I'll be able to get there.
Good luck with that, man. It sounds like it sucks.
Yeah, we got about 10 inches. Mm. Not fun.
We had a tsunami warning this morning.
You did? Was it a real one, or did somebody hit a wrong button?
No, it was real. Apparently, big earthquake off the coast of Alaska caused a tsunami threat.
All right, stay dry. Keep off the landfill.
Thanks.
Do you think people are going to watch this year? I mean, obviously I know people are going to watch, but there's sort of been a diminishing audience for the Oscars for a few years now. Do you see that trend continuing? You know, there's this sort of worry about, did we nominate enough popular movies? I really think they got it right.
I think they got it right, first of all, which is good. Second of all, well, and part and parcel to getting it right, like, how many people are watching the Oscars to see, you know, Coco win? Like, I don't feel like popular movies are the key to winning an Oscars audience.
I don't know if it's quite as simple as popular movies are the key to winning an audience, but I do think there are a lot of people, like, who tune in and go, I didn't watch any of these movies. You know, I don't know what happened in these movies.
A statement of our culture than a statement of what's nominated. Like, what movie would you suggest go in there?
Well, if you could have clearly made Star Wars the 10th movie, I don't think people would have been right. Star Wars got really great reviews. I don't think
okay,
that
but
it would
do you think it would have? You think nominating Star Wars for Best Picture would have markedly changed viewership?
I don't know about markedly, but yeah, I do think it probably would have had a positive effect, small as it may be.
It wouldn't have hurt, obviously, but I just don't know that Star Wars fans are tuning into a whole thing, like award show, just because Star Wars.
Right. It's not like, oh, Star Wars fans are like, oh, I got to watch the Oscars tonight because we're going to see if Star Wars wins. But the Oscars is a thing a lot of people watch, and so is Star Wars. And maybe you watch a little bit longer if Star Wars is in another category. You know what I mean? Because you're interested.
Yeah.
You're already watching.
Did they get some effects noms at least?
It did get some effects noms, and I think it's probably got a good chance to win some of those. So.
Yeah, why the hell not? I mean, you know. But
also,
shout out to
Baby Driver for getting some sound nominations.
Yeah, it deserved it.
Because I do think it deserves it, and I think it may win. And shouts to my man Johnny Greenwood from Radiohead. Who got a score nomination for Phantom Thread.
That's half of why I'm excited to see the movie.
I know.
His scores are unbelievable.
He does the scores for all the PTA movies these days, and they're all really excellent. And then, and Sufjan Stevens for Call Me By Your Name. I really liked his music in that movie and thought it kind of added something to it. So,
yeah, very unlike, and yet not unlike Baby Driver, the music in that movie feels very important to what's happening.
Yes. Agreed. And Lady Bird 2 a little bit, by the way.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. And all three in very different ways, which is super cool.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to this the ceremony. It's going to be fun.
I am interested. And what I was going to say quickly, last thought on watchability, is I would think that the question of what the atmosphere will be like, what the sort of Me Too, Time's Up vibe will be, I would think that is as likely to increase viewership as any particular nominations would have been.
I suppose that's fair. I mean, I definitely think there's a certain segment of America that will care about that. There's a certain segment of America that won't care, but that segment is also very much the people who are probably not all that psyched to watch the Oscars.
Yeah, I don't think you're getting that. That's kind of my point. Yeah. Like, you know, there's all this. This is a quick side on television in general and ratings in general and how many people watch any given thing in general. Like, things have ceilings. And I think there's this American idea that however many people are watching or listening or paying attention, we need more. But like sometimes you find your audience and you can succeed and continue and that's enough.
Yeah. And look, I think there are a lot of people who don't really think much about TV ratings who don't quite get that there's a diffusion and a deterioration of everything, particularly the things at the very top.
Exactly.
It's like things are just going to be watched less.
The monoculture is dead. Yeah. This has happened. It's over.
You know, I said that to someone in like a casual conversation and got like, what's monoculture? And you remember like, oh yeah, like I think about this stuff and a lot of people do not. So
yeah, these are weird, like nerdy pop culture conversations that we have.
Yeah. Although I'd argue that if you understand the prefix mono, you could probably pick up on the monoculture from syntax there.
Sure, but I don't want to be the guy that tells you to stop talking to morons. You know, that's not my role.
Fair enough. Know your role and shut your mouth. all right, so St. Vincent last night. It was good times? Was it last night you saw St. Vincent?
Man, yeah, it was last night. And I wanted to make sure to talk about this specifically because of the context that it was brought up in the last time we talked about it, which was I had just seen Sid, the R&B artist, who I very much enjoy on record and whose concert I panned and left early.
Because it was just her, right?
Yelled about on this podcast. Yeah. And I think the chief way I explained my frustration was to say she's all alone on stage and nothing's happening. So I just want to be sure that I adequately explain myself when I say that Sid was on a relatively dark stage with like, you know, undulating low UV type colored lights that didn't change or become interesting in any way, a blank screen essentially behind her that was just catching some of that light, and fully assembled over-based backing tracks that drowned out her voice.
Yeah.
St. Vincent, who is alone on stage outside of her guitar, multiple microphones, and I believe effects pedals, although I couldn't see that very clearly, and people in incredible ninja / futuristic spaceman outfits wandering around stage to hand her different guitars and slides and different things that she's using. So, but even if it was just her, she has
playing the backing tracks, I might add. Right, she's playing the
backing tracks, right? Yeah. Yeah. She has an incredible sense of performance and stage presence and involving herself with the audience and giving and taking. She has a phenomenal light show. She has bizarre and amazing images and videos flashing around behind her. And most importantly, she's a guitar wizard. And she's doing things with a guitar that would make Tom Morello jealous. And so it's okay to be one person on a stage if you put on an incredible show and play your music. And this show was incredible.
It's pretty great. Did you watch the movie that, you know, kind of serves as her opening act?
That was not the case. Her opening act was her aunt and uncle.
Oh, that's neat.
Her aunt and uncle, a couple, the dude plays guitar, but he's like a, you know, Django Reinhardt almost type of playing pop stuff in a classical style, playing the bass and the lead, and all finger picking. And he looks kind of like Jimmy Page, and she looks kind of like Patti LaBelle. and has the most unbelievable voice. And it's like this funky little acoustic guitar and jazz vocal thing. And they did some ballads and they did some sort of funked up stuff. And he did like 5 minutes of stand-up comedy and played Stevie Wonder's I Wish on guitar, which was one of the coolest. I mean, he was just awesome. So it was a really chill vibe for the opener, but they were literally her family. And like he talked about her as a baby at one point, and it was quite a scene, man. And her, again, the issue is not the human count on stage. The issue is, did you plan and execute a spectacular stage show? And St. Vincent is at the top when it comes to that.
Yeah, well, look, and I certainly, you can see the planning and execution of that stage show, and I would not have implied otherwise.
No, you didn't. I just wanted to make sure that my gripe about Sid standing alone on stage was clear.
Can I say one thing in defense of Sid, not having seen this show?
And, totally.
And no slights to St. Vincent. I'm guessing she was working on a much smaller budget for that performance than St. Vincent probably had access to.
Oh, by a million. But honestly, like, you know, Sid is working on a bigger budget than a lot of great shows I've seen.
All right, fair. Tough but fair. where was that show?
Sid or St. Vincent?
St. Vincent.
Interestingly enough, it was at Bill Graham Civic Auditorium in San Francisco, which, although I've seen great shows there on many occasions, is not my favorite venue because the sound can be a little high school gymnasium-y,
yeah.
But it sounded great.
That seems like not an ideal place to see her, but...
No, I think they had... I don't know if they just turned down from where a lot of people are, but it was really... The clarity was good, which is my concern when I go there.
Yeah, glad she's filled up that size of room. Okay, so crashing...
Yeah,
sorry.
They sold seats upstairs. It wasn't even all GA.
Nice.
Yeah.
Crashing is back. I think we can move on to that.
Yeah.
I've been enjoying this... Pete, I've been enjoying this season so far. It's just a fun, kind of amiable, good hang kind of show. You know what I mean?
I don't totally remember our experience with it last year because, you know, I'm me. But I remember maybe taking a few weeks to feel like it really found its groove. And it's in a groove now. You know who Pete Holmes, the character, is. And he's really funny. I mean, he's just a funny guy.
Yeah.
Like, I think this show, more than many shows built around comedians, hangs on Pete himself both playing the role successfully and just being funny in his very specific way.
Yeah.
And I think these first couple episodes have really been good examples of that.
And I feel like the show's at a place now where it's hanging a little bit less on the famous guest stars.
Right. Yeah, we know we're a little bit more able to identify with his story and get involved in his progress as a comedian.
Yeah, and I think this the most recent episode that aired Sunday was a really good example of that.
Yep. You know, where the only other character basically is his sort of roommate slash the guy who boned his wife.
Yeah, and Dr. Oz.
And Dr. Oz with one of the best guest spots I've ever seen.
Definitely the best I've ever seen Dr. Oz, 100%.
My estimation of Dr. Oz rose tenfold based on his 2-minute guest spot on Crashing.
Yeah, he's still a black mark on Oprah's career and judgment in my book, but whatever. I did enjoy
well,
his
agree
spot.
With that, but at least he has a sense of humor about himself.
Yeah, exactly,
which I would not have imagined previously.
Yeah, indeed. And I do think that you know, the first 5 minutes of that show this week where you know, Pete's waking up in Allison, was that the character's name, the comedian's bed.
Yeah.
Really great. Really,
yeah, great. He's just he's got a shirt on under the covers. This is a slight spoiler. His shirt's on and he's under the covers the whole time, and then he stands up and he's got no bottoms.
Yep.
And there's just Pete Holmes really does have a handle. You know, his podcast is called You Made It Weird, And I think if this show succeeds the most in one place, it's in those hilarious, weird moments.
He knows how to make it weird.
He does. And it's really in a really funny way.
I really feel like, though, if you take a bunch of dry pasta and pour a crap load of Prego all over it and put it in the oven, that it would come out inedible. I don't mean not good. I mean literally inedible, like crunchy and gross.
Totally. It appeared to have grown cheese instead of while it was in the oven, instead of just remaining rock hard because it was never boiled. Because
there's no water. How are you making a pasta? Yeah, sorry.
It didn't make any sense. It made very, very, very little sense. But the key element made perfect sense, where he did the dumb thing and broke a table. Yeah. So, yes. I wonder also about Pete Holmes' pasta making ability, but the show works.
Yeah, it does work. And you know, one of the things that I think it did really successfully, you know, this character of Leif, obviously, he still has some function as sort of comic relief, but he really could have been super one note. And I think that they, you know, by having an episode like this and taking this guy, and we've been now sort of fleshing him out over time. I mean, it's not like the essence of him has changed.
No.
But you do feel like there's a real person in there, and you can have moments of poignancy walking around with this guy in the city, and I
not
really
just
that.
What's the word I'm looking for? Caricature of a hippie who bones your wife, but a funny hippie who is a real person.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think actually like genuinely sort of cares about Pete, you know?
In his own weird hippie way.
In his own weird hippie way.
Yeah, and it really works. I honestly, that's why I was trying to think back to the beginning of last season. Like, if you had told me at the beginning of the show that episode 2, season 2, is basically a bottle episode where Pete and Leif hang out the whole time, I would have said, I'm not sure how well this show is working. Yeah. But, in fact, it's working great.
Yeah. All right, maybe we should discuss a show that's at episode 1. At least at the time of taping this, American Horror Story, or Crime Story, rather. Sorry. There's too many American stories.
We will not be discussing American Horror Story. You mentioning it scared me a little bit.
I do not watch American Horror Story, so I've been told it's great, but it doesn't seem like it's for me. American Crime Story, though, I am all about, at least as long as they don't ever make that Katrina one. That sounds bad. But this Versace... this looks like this is going to be a thing, right?
Okay, I'm mixed actually. Okay, I've no complaints about episode 1. To be clear, perfectly good episode of television. I don't really have any complaints at all per se. I'm a little.
Can I guess where you're going with this?
You're what?
Can I guess where you're going with this?
Sure.
You're not crazy about the time structure of the way this is being shown to you, is that?
No, I'm fine with that. It's more just I don't 100% know why we're doing this.
Oh well, I mean, I feel like I can take that on.
Do you remember the Versace story as news?
Oh yes, definitely. And that's
but
the thing.
As like beyond just oh man, Versace got killed.
No. And, you know, I should say, and I probably shouldn't have done this, but I immediately went on an Andrew Kanin and Wikipedia deep dive.
Oh, you did? Okay.
And I'm like, whoa.
But, like, I had never heard that name before.
Oh, yeah. I definitely knew. If you just said, who killed Gianni Versace, I'd have been like, Andrew Kanin.
I didn't know that. I don't know. Maybe that's what year was it?
I believe it was 1997.
Yeah, 97. You see, I'm surprised, and maybe it's hard to say what involvement I had in the damn news at that point, but, you know, I don't remember. It doesn't strike me as big a deal as, like, I mean, nothing's as big a deal as OJ, I suppose, but.
It was a pretty big deal when it happened.
I guess so. So part of it is I'm just like. Everything seems good. I'm not sure I'm as interested in knowing the details of the Versace murder as I, or in sensationalizing the details of the Versace murder as I was with OJ. That doesn't mean it won't be a good show, But there is part of me that says, and maybe this is the complaint about the time structure that you were anticipating. There's part of me that says, like, okay, so there's not really any mystery here because they told us from the beginning exactly what happened. And this isn't, like, the most captivating story of my lifetime, like OJ. So, like, why are we all here?
Well, did you do any Wikipedia deep dive?
I did not. I did none. I did no research.
Do you? All right. I'm just going to say this.
Say what you need to say.
I mean, this is a thing that's happened and is pretty in the public record. So I don't know if spoiler alert is the right way to say this. But, you know, if you don't want to know anything about what's going to happen on the show, maybe jump out of this. You know, the assassination of Gianni Versace is not the only assassination from Andrew Cannata. In fact, this was the tail end.
No, they say that.
Yeah, tail end of a killing spree.
They say that in episode one.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think.
It's a crazy person on a killing spree. So is this really more of like a serial killer show?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what it's going to be a little bit about. It's a little bit about crazy, right? Crazy charismatic guy. You know, gay guy. I guess is part of that. You know, what leads him to go on this killing spree and how does this killing spree lead him to Versace, I think is going to be where the show is, right?
Okay, so, I guess, yeah. I just don't – yeah, and again, I have no reason to believe it won't be well made and good. I just – I super cared to see the dramatization of OJ, and I don't know that I do in this case.
And, I also feel like the Spectre – I mean, obviously, she was in Spectre is maybe the wrong word because she's certainly in the first episode.
Donatella?
Yeah, just the idea of Donatella hovering all over this and Penelope Cruz vamping as Donatella for, 7-8 more weeks. Fired up about that. Fired up about that. And it's oddly enough, I think that that we probably owe a debt to Saturday Night Live for creating that sense of anticipation.
That's funny. I will say that was the most exciting moment of the premiere for me was seeing Penelope Cruz walk in as Donatella Versace.
Yeah. And I feel like she didn't disappoint in the first episode, and I think it's nearly – we're just at the start. So.
No, I mean she really – you buy it.
Yeah.
There's no question. You buy it.
I gotta say, I'm on Versace's Wikipedia page right now, and I think they did a good job. The actor looks like him.
Oh, it's very well cast. Yes. Yeah, and frankly, the Andrew Cunanan, they've got what's his face from Glee looking just like Andrew Cunanan.
Yeah. Yeah. No, just like
what's his name? Blake. Why can't I put? Andrew, I'm having a terrible
Darren
name.
Chris. Darren Chris is Darren the actor's Chris. Name. Yeah.
I was pulling his name from Glee, I think. Oh, boy. Yeah, but I would say, like, this all looks exactly how you want it to look. And you will fool yourself into thinking, oh, man, Penelope Cruz really looks like Donatella Versace, but she doesn't. That's makeup and stuff.
Yeah.
That's not what a 43-year-old Penelope Cruz looks like at all.
I am also somewhat fired up for this, and you know, it's just a personal thing. But you know, this killing spree starts in Minneapolis, so I'm curious to see how that goes. I'm pretty sure he kills someone, hides them in a loft, and I'm pretty sure that loft is in my neighborhood somewhere. So I'm
nice,
fired up about that.
Nice, you got to put together the Andrew Cunanan tour of Minneapolis. You know?
Yeah, that needs to happen. I'm all about that. He buried a body in a lake. Good times.
Crazy serial killer. Interesting story, I guess. Maybe I'm coming around on this thing.
Yeah, I think there's some potential here.
But again, I wasn't like upset. There was nothing about it where I was like, I just at the end I was like, I'm not totally sure why I'm here.
Yeah, I think there's going to be plenty of story. I'm not worried that they have a lack of story.
I'm going to trust you.
all right. Yeah,
famous last words.
Yeah. Sorry to burn you on that. let's jump to sports real quick. Do we need to talk a ton about the Super Bowl? Here's the interesting thing to me. on the Super Bowl. It's the line.
Mm-hmm. What was it, 3.5?
It's 5.5.
Oh.
And my instinct.
Underrate Nick Foles at your own peril, yeah. Say the Vikings and whoever he beat, Falcons.
Yeah. Thanks for that.
My bad.
My instinct, though, at 5, and is your instinct to – so you like the points, basically, is what you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually think – here's a weird one for you. This is a weird thought I had about the Super Bowl. After what we've watched, I think this is the best matchup we could have gotten.
I mean, it depends on sort of what you mean by after what we watched.
I mean, I believe after what I've seen that the Eagles have the best chance to slow down the Patriots offense, and that Doug Peterson and Nick Foles have something working where they've been able to move the ball without turning it over.
Yeah. All right. So
we thought the Vikings were that team a week ago, maybe,
yeah, see,
but
I think
we saw that they weren't.
I know, but that's the thing is like, I think the Vikings just came out and stepped on their dicks. You know what I mean? Like,
that's possible, but I'll say this.
Such an uncharacteristic performance from that team.
It was, but I will say this. I said before that game, Case Keenum, much as I thought he was the better quarterback in the game, he will throw one or two to the other team if they're ready in any game. And they jumped on him early, and it completely changed the course of the game. And,
neither of those turnovers was his fault, though. I mean, it was the, you know.
That is both a characteristic of that quarterback and of that defense.
Yeah.
And that's the way it went.
You know, it's not a characteristic of that defense, giving up 24 points in the first half.
The Minnesota defense, I agree. They just had a crap day. But I think you have to give Peterson and Foles some credit for that.
Yeah, look, and there's no slight to the Eagles. When I say this, but I think that Minnesota was the best designed team to stop what the Patriots do, both on offense and on defense, because I do think that they, should have been capable of really being physical against New England's receivers. They have the safeties who can cover Gronkowski. I really liked what they could do defensively, and then offensively, you know. New England doesn't have a great front seven. They have slow linebackers. And I think that, a guy like Thielen in the slot would have posed a number of problems for them.
But after what we just watched, if you take
him away, they have options. You know what I mean?
But so, after what we just watched,
Rudolph would have been a problem for them, too.
I think. But listen, everything you're saying, I would have said also a week ago, but I think we've been proven that the Eagles actually have the better skill
players. Again, I would say, like, yeah, on that Sunday, absolutely that happened. But I would say that was characteristic of that Sunday, and probably something intrinsic to the Vikings and their, you know what I mean, and that franchise. But you could argue that obviously that would show up in the Super Bowl, and that's fine.
That's exactly right. And I would also say that you ignore the effects of Alshon Jeffrey at your peril. I mean, that this is not stuff we've never seen from him. And Nelson Agholor, this type of speed out of the slot, making short passes into successful downs, is something that they always thought they would get from him. The backfield of Blunt and Ajayi and the tight end with Ertz, like all these, it's yes. Going into last week, I also thought I would prefer Thielen, Diggs, and Rudolph, but it's not like Jeffrey, Agholor, Smith, and Ertz was that far behind. And after what we watched, they're certainly playing better right now.
Yeah, I mean, again.
I mean, Nick Foles went downfield against a tremendous secondary, and big receivers made big-time plays.
Yeah, look, again, I don't want to take away any credit from the Eagles. And I don't think there's a huge difference in between these two teams. But I do think that if these teams played 10 times, that Minnesota would win 7 or 8.
Oof.
I do. I think
I would have said that beforehand, but again, I have to change my opinion based on what I saw.
Yeah, because that's what I'm saying.
It was
like
a whooping.
It was a whooping. There's no dispute of that. It was a whooping, but I would say it was a bed crapping.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? As much as anything else. And then I think also, too, that you're discounting one thing when you're talking about, well, who is better suited to beat the Patriots? You know, the fact that the Vikings would have a home game.
Okay,
you got to throw that in the mix, too.
So let's talk about that, because I wanted to see that, and I'm a little bummed it doesn't get to happen. But it really wouldn't have been a home game. Look, there's still not going to be a ton of Viking fans in the stadium.
I would disagree with that. I get what you're saying in terms of, like, you know,
it's not going to be like
it's corporate. It's corporate. A lot of the seats are not controlled. You're not going to have access. Yes, all of that is true. But I think first of all, you're going to get a ton of Vikings fans who buy tickets on the secondary market. A ton, right?
Yeah, because you're going to get that from Eagles fans too.
I think in much greater number than the Patriots fans who are, you know, who have seen this movie before. And because of the Patriots, all the neutrals are going to be rooting for the Vikings anyway. So,
well, but all the neutrals are that most of those. See, this is what I'm saying. Most of those things still apply with the Eagles. The biggest difference, I think, is actually the city the week leading up.
Right. You're going to have the city. I'm just telling you, I really think it would have been a sort of a different scene.
It would have been a totally different scene. I'm just not sure the crowd noise in the stadium would have been that much louder or more impactful for Minnesota than it will be for Philly.
But there are other things that create a home field advantage besides the crowd noise. You know what I mean?
Sleeping in your bed. There's lots of things. I'm just saying, in terms of the actual in-game, in-stadium experience, I'm not sure it could have ever been a home game, per se.
Yeah, look, it's not going to be – I'm not saying it's going to be like if you played the Vikings in Week 16. You know what I mean? But I think it would be a lot closer to that than – to a neutral field, put it that way.
I agree. It would have been a factor, but I do think the Eagles fans will show up much more so than the Patriots fans.
I suspect that's true, obviously, just because it's
and been Philly fans. Philly fans are crazy enough that half as many might make just as much noise.
Can you imagine? I mean, like, I don't know. I really should just go out of town for a week. Like,
yeah, man, rent your spot out.
Thousands of Boston and Philly fans. For 7 days.
It's gonna be the worst. It's gonna be the worst place to be for that week.
Oh God, what a nightmare!
God forbid, like something in baseball happens while they're there. Like, what if JD Martinez gets signed by the Red Sox while your city is filled with thousands of Boston fans?
They can't. They can't do that.
It'd be awful.
I'm still tempted to really take the Pats at. -5.5. I did not realize that last year's win was their greatest Super Bowl margin of victory.
They never cover.
You think of them as like a juggernaut, and they have not blown anyone out.
It's important to remember that at least a couple of their wins were
upsets.
Underdogs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so, a couple. The first one was.
Wasn't there another as well? I feel like there might have been a second one. Even if it was just the one, like, they came out of nowhere originally. Like, that was not just an upset. It was a complete shocker when they beat the Rams.
Yeah, that was a shocker. Like, they might have been an underdog against the Seahawks, but, like, it was less than a field goal, I'm pretty sure.
And in general, if you just sort of scan your brain on Patriots Super Bowls, they mostly came down to an Adam Vinatieri kick.
Yeah, a whole lot of them. A whole lot of them. Except for that one stupid overtime touchdown.
Yeah, once they got rid of Adam Vinatieri, they had to do it in more creative ways.
Stupid.
I'm sorry. What a tough 2-year run for you.
Good Lord.
You want to talk about basketball?
They're bringing back Sark, man. Like,
I don't want to do this with you. This is just going to be sad. There's nothing to be gotten to here.
Can I just? I'm just going to ask this question. What would he have to do to not come back?
After 1 year, I would say that the move to keep him suggests he could not have done anything this year to lose the job.
I think there's one obvious thing, which is that if he showed up drunk all the time, I think.
Right. That's, well, that, okay. Yeah. But short of that.
Like, it's not like it's beyond the realm of possibility. You know what I mean?
I know. It's a little dark. But I think other than that, you would have had to have, like, Julio, Matt Ryan, and Devontae Freeman all walk into the GM's office together and say, we can't work for this guy.
Yeah.
Well, but I don't think that's happening.
Maybe I could get a Slack chain going when we figure this out. Guys.
Worth a try, man, because that was an atrocious showing for him for basically all year. And, you know, literally the only thing I can say to encourage you is that Kyle Shanahan also had trouble his first year. But, you can poke holes in that argument pretty easily.
He scored 14 points. We're in the Super Bowl. There's a decent chance we're in the Super Bowl. Sorry.
I know.
So bitter. Okay. Speaking of bitter, Cleveland Cavaliers had a closed door meeting yesterday. Apparently, this is best Woj bomb of the season. This Woj bomb last night about this meeting.
Can you even rank Woj bombs? Like, they're all fire.
they are. This was a good one though. Where apparently Kevin Love was called out for.
Being Kevin Love.
For leaving the game early and skipping practice over the weekend. They actually had a practice. That's probably also really a Woj moment if you think about it. Yeah. I tend to just be like, as fascinating as that is in a sources say kind of way, I tend to think all things with the Cavaliers are just blips on their way to a losing conference final or NBA finals.
How many times has some member of this team said we thrive on conflict, drama, and struggle?
Yeah.
Every year, someone comes out and gives a damn speech about how they're working at their best when they're screaming at each other and things seem to suddenly be going wrong. They want their backs against the wall. But every single year we go through this. So am I writing the Cavaliers off? Of course not. Do I think they'll be in the conference finals? Of course I do.
Yeah, like if the predicament is we might slip to third in the East, it's like yawn. You know? Cool,
that's
see you in
right.
the finals.
And ultimately, as long as LeBron is fully healthy come playoff time, there's only one or two teams in the East that could even possibly beat them.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, that's it. That's it. That's the situation. As long as LeBron is healthy.
Are there one or two teams in the East? I guess Boston. Boston could possibly beat them?
Yeah. I mean, if LeBron is healthy and you know, doing his playoff LeBron thing, I certainly think the Celtics have a chance.
Do you see any scenario in which Toronto beats them? I don't.
Hard to imagine it. Yeah. He has just imposed his will on Toronto every time they've met in the playoffs.
The teams that we thought would step up, maybe, or could potentially step up, you know, and get better would be the Wizards and the Bucks. And
the Wizards are a mess, happening. And the Bucks just fired their head coach.
Yeah, so, like, it's going to be fun. And I think, honestly, to me, maybe the most noteworthy thing out of this is that I feel like Tyronn Lue really solidified his job over these couple of days, because I think, you know, at least from what you're reading, the sense is that he's the guy holding this thing together right now.
That's not a surprise to me, because if you had asked me when they hired Tyronn Lue what would be the biggest strength he'll bring to this, I would have guessed it was personality management. I mean, yeah. I'm sure he's a fine coach, but I think the reason Ty Lue's here is because the Cavs believed he could actually talk to LeBron and that the other players would respect him as well.
I'm not sure he's a fine coach, but I agree with everything else you just said.
Yeah.
So,
I'm not sure. I have no idea how fine a coach he is. Honestly, it's impossible to judge a head coach dealing with LeBron James. It's just impossible, because the game is his, yeah, and he completely changes both the ceiling of the team and how good they might be, and also what you're actually functionally able to do on the floor, because everything has to run through him, and ultimately he's going to be the creator.
Yeah. I mean, I think the way that you judge a coach who's dealing with LeBron James is, how well does he deal with LeBron James?
And I think Ty Lue is, you know, good on that score. He has not been perfect, but he's doing that job.
Yeah. He is. He's doing that job, whereas his predecessor did not.
That's right.
And I'm already blanking on his name, and we're never going to see him again.
We just heard from him. Did you hear about this?
No.
David Blatt.
Thank you.
He was coaching in some foreign league. I don't know if it's Israel again. I can't remember. But he was coaching an all-star game. And it was the night after the Cavaliers gave up 148 to OKC. And so, naturally, David Blatt,
he's dropping,
being a
I told you
doofus, said someone asked him, you know, how are you going to get the guys to play defense? And he said, well, you know, hopefully we won't give up 148 like the Cavs did. Oh. So they didn't.
Yeah, bad luck.
151.
Oh, no. that's the worst look. It went from the bad look to the worst look.
That's right.
Are you anything else in the NBA have your attention?
Well, I do think, speaking of OKC, that their significantly improved play is worth noting. I mean, this team was floundering, seems like, a week or two ago, and all of a sudden they're up to fifth in the West. They got a real good shot at jumping over San Antonio, who has lots of problems. And
yeah. Spurs disarray feels just weird, doesn't it?
Well, when you lose one of the best players in the league for an extended period, it's tough. You know, it is weird, but we got to start getting used to it, because they have had a remarkable run of talent and health that seems to have come to an end.
I guess. Well, I mean, I think that they have. I mean, I think they do a lot in terms of preventative measures.
You know
what I mean? So that helps.
Oh, no, I'm not discrediting them in any respect. It's all because of stuff they do.
Right. Well, I mean, I think
because of the coaching and the drafting and the assembling the roster down the line with guys from Europe who turn out to be excellent players and all that sort of stuff. They're great. It's just, you know, there are limits.
Yeah. I mean, I think the noteworthy thing there is not that, you know, hey, the star player's hurt. It's that there seem to be some cultural problems that are going with it. You know, and to top it off about, you know, last year everyone sort of speculated like, things are not good with LaMarcus Aldridge. He probably wants out. And they were like, no, no, no. And it turns out like, oh yeah, he totally wanted out. He asked for a trade. You know what I mean? So,
I feel like that's a black mark on LaMarcus, not on the Spurs. There has been a little bit of smoke around a beef between Kawhi and the franchise over the management of this injury. But honestly, my feeling on all of this stuff is not unlike – this is a weird analogy, but it's on my mind for some reason. It's not unlike how I respond to Niner fans who complained about Levi's Stadium for the last 3, 4, or 5 years.
You could just say Niner fans.
Well, but the point is, Levi Stadium stinks in a lot of ways. A lot of problems.
Yeah, see, now you're doing it.
No, but this is my point. They screwed it up in a lot of ways, in a lot of areas. Fine. But the real complaint is the team. And that's my thing with San Antonio. Sure, maybe Kawhi is a little annoyed, and maybe LaMarcus wanted a trade last year. But ultimately, all of this is just about the fact that their season is slipping away from them. And if Kawhi comes back and looks good and they go on a, you know, run where they win 10 out of 12, none of the alleged cultural problems are going to be an issue.
Yeah. Well, look,
that being said, Oklahoma City is climbing the standings, and this is a team that I had almost written off when they turned it around. So I think that's worth noting, because if they do actually get rolling in a real way and get something out of their role players and get their three stars playing well, that becomes a very interesting playoff team, especially if they get a home series in the first round.
Look, there are going to be some tough outs in the playoffs. You know what I mean? New Orleans,
I'm not saying
is starting
to beat the Warriors.
Yeah, New Orleans is starting to look like some tough outs, a tough out as well. But they're still outs. You know what I mean? Like,
everybody's an out, but how interesting that the rest of the playoffs are is entirely dependent on how those outs are playing.
Yeah. No, well, look,
and
I think
not like we know. Yes, we all think the Warriors are going to win, and they obviously should, as long as everyone's healthy and available and playing reasonably well. But I'm here for the rest of the playoffs, too. And the Thunder actually playing well would dramatically increase the quality of the rest of the playoffs.
I mean, like, were you worried about the Western Conference playoffs being competitive? I mean, I think between the Wolves and the Spurs and the Thunder and the Pelicans and, you know, throw one more in there.
I was about the first round when it looked like it might be the Clippers and the Nuggets and mediocre Blazers and Pelicans teams. Yeah, I would have been disappointed if OKC was playing mediocre in the 8th seed or the 9th seed. Yeah, I'd have been very disappointed.
Yeah, I think it's shaping up about to be about the way that we thought. Except the Wolves. The Wolves are a little bit higher than where we thought.
The Wolves are really good.
Yeah. And now they're, you know, I mean, Butler sort of asserted his role as the leader of the team, and I think it went well. And now they're winning games without him. So,
You know, sometimes you once you lock into whatever the team dynamic is, it's less about, you know, you can miss your star for a couple of games and maintain. But having a team identity is important, like sort of before that.
Yeah. What's going to be important for them is their legs not falling off before the end of the year.
Well, that remains an issue. But I will say, despite their completely irresponsible minute management, these guys are finally playing defense.
They are playing defense. And, you know, they're finding some things on the bench. The bench is still really bad, and it's still going to be a problem for them. Although maybe if everyone is healthy and energetic, less so in the playoffs because everyone will be playing in the eight-man rotation. So
yeah, and I'm going to say it again. You know, your bench is usually as good as your coach. I'm not saying they got the deepest squad in the world, but they got plenty of guys who can be useful off a bench if they're used properly, and that's just a fact.
Yeah, well, and I think that's been some of it. I think that they are figuring out, where Jamal Crawford fits in that.
And I do
Bielitsa
think some of this is
Tom
Thibodeau is a guy who needs to trust. And I think probably the best criticism of him is that he is too stingy with that trust in terms of investing it in his own players, especially young players and guys who are not known for their defense. So unfortunately, the bench of this squad is entirely made up of young players and guys who are not known for their defense, and it is taking Tibbs a very long time to decide that any of them are trustworthy. But hopefully, as he does, he'll be able to ease the toll on those top three a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping he's going to watch Chris Dunn and make me go, "Whoa, oh man, maybe there's some lessons to be learned here." Because that was a young guy, by the way, who did play defense and
that's true.
Couldn't get minutes.
That's
so
true. That was just that was just the young guy thing. Yeah. And I'll tell you what else. He could look around at any number of other people in the league who either did not thrive under him or had their careers ruined under him because of overusage. So if he was looking around, he would certainly be changing. I'm not sure he's paying attention.
Yeah. Are you fired up about Lauri Markkanen?
Very much so. Lauri Markkanen is already better than I thought his ceiling was.
Yeah.
It's gotta be. And that, like, I knew the Bulls were getting a 7-footer who could shoot and maybe grab the occasional rebound. And, you know, his ceiling was a valuable, if generally role, NBA player. And what I'm seeing is a guy who, if he grows a little bit, can be sort of a not even that poor man's Dirk Nowitzki. He attacks the rim with a aggressiveness that I did not see from him in college. He rebounds with a sturdiness that I did not see from him in college. And I think he's put on 20 pounds since I saw him in college because he's much stronger. So I have been very impressed. And the only problem is the Bulls are now playing so well that they're going to play themselves out of a top five draft pick almost for sure.
I wonder how many of these picks that we kind of made fun of when they happen and they start panning out. You know, Porzingis was obviously that.
Oh no, I don't think people made fun of Porzingis.
Oh
when
yeah,
it
they did. Oh yeah, they did. There was a lot of Phil Jackson. What are you doing? Yeah,
those people were stupid at the time.
You like go back and look at the YouTube clip of the boos when he got drafted.
Well, but the Knicks boo every single draft pick. That's not noteworthy.
Yeah, I mean, like it was a thing. Frankie Smokes, you know,
that one is definitely one. That one is definitely one that was like, "What the hell's happening?" And actually, this guy looks like he can really play.
Markkanen. So you look. Obviously, it's going to be the Euro players because no one has any. You know,
that's right.
They're all
we don't
crap
know who
sheets.
They are. So. Although Markkanen did play at Arizona, you know, I mean, I watched him multiple times, including live in person, and I did not see this coming. So.
I found him to be unimpressive at Arizona for sure.
Yeah, exactly. So. Exactly.
You know, it's like I thought the kid at Gonzaga was way better, and he barely gets off the bench for Portland.
Yeah, the big kid.
Yeah.
Tarzewski or whatever his name was.
Although you can understand. Zach Collins or whatever.
Oh, Collins.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, he's good too. Although he is like 12 and very raw and wasn't even starting for Gonzaga. So I don't know if I would have agreed with you.
Yeah, I mean, look, he was raw, but a lot of potential. The other guy, this Sabonis kid, looks like a player too from Gonzaga.
Well, again, like that gets back to the whole, like,
yeah,
how do we judge young players in environments that aren't working for them?
Right.
You know, the playing next to Russ has effects that can be similar to playing for Tom Thibodeau as a rookie player. And I think we're seeing that not only with the rookie, now second year guy Sabonis, but with Oladipo, who is almost definitely going to be an all-star.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Actually, that happened, didn't it? I think he probably already is an all-star. Yeah. Did they announce
all-stars? Have they announced the reserves yet?
I think they did that today, or maybe that's coming later today. Maybe that's what it is.
We should go through that at some point. All right, let's get the hell out of here.
All right, bye. No, wait, it's too early. Hold on, we have to do homework.
All right, what do you got for homework?
I think we should watch Phantom Thread. Or at least I should, because that's really the one Oscar thing I have missed. How many movies can you catch up on becomes the question.
All right. I mean,
Mudbound, you got to see Mudbound. You can watch that on your couch for free.
I can do all three. I'm gonna finish last week's homework.
That is very ambitious.
We'll do that in for Phantom Thread.
Okay.
And then, yeah.
Hey, don't start writing checks your ass can't cash, though. Nah, I just wanted to say that.
I mean, clearly, it's not like saying it at this point of the week holds me to it anyway, so I might as well go big or go home, you know what I mean?
Clearly, you're more than comfortable promising to do things and not even pretending to do them during the course of the week. But no, I mean, I think catching up on Oscars, so we could hopefully talk about Mudbound, I, Tonya, and Phantom Thread next week. I think we've covered, to some degree, many, if not all, of the other big nominees.
Yeah. Anything coming to television that we need to catch up on? I can't really think of anything that's starting off the top of my head.
Yeah, I don't have anything start. There is a new HBO show, but it didn't look that fascinating to me. I would like to revisit The Chi. I believe we'll be halfway through the season next time we talk.
Okay, we can do that. I'm like one behind on The Chi right now, but I'll get caught up on that.
Let me just. I think this was episode 4. I just watched. Yeah, no, it was only 3. So we'll be through 4 episodes next week, which I think it will be a good place to check in and see if it's sort of delivering on the promise we felt in the first episode. You know, this is a separate thing to consider, but a show that's been on, it's entering its 3rd season, that I think might actually sort of be up our alley if we can find a way to squeeze some of it in. I don't know how we would best do that, if it would be best to go back to the beginning or jump in at season 3, but are you aware of the show Another Period?
I am aware of it, yeah.
I'm just a big fan of Natasha Leggero and Ricky Lindholm, who are the lead actresses. It's a comedy about, essentially, as I've heard them describe it, basically the Kardashians of the Gilded Age in America.
Yeah, I've watched one or two of these, and I'm not super into it.
Not a fan. Okay. All right. Well, let's table that for now then. And I would say there's nothing big in the next 2 weeks that returns. So let's check in on The Chi, unless you want to talk about the Baskets season 3 premiere. I'm not sure where you are on
Baskets. Did you say The Bachelor? Yeah, let's do it. I have some Bachelor thoughts.
No, Baskets.
Yeah, pass on Baskets.
No, it's Baskets with Baskets. Zach Galifianakis.
Okay. But Bachelor, I got thoughts. All right, let's get out of here.
Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.